This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 20th of May 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 19th of May 2016, which this week has been edited by Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Our readers today are Margot Meredith.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Peter Lydiard.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Greens call for car park charge hikes, Beacon celebrations, and uproar over gun licence for farm. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
And that is Greens call for car park charge hikes. Green campaigners in Winchester are calling for a complete rethink on parking in the city. Charging motorists more in the city centre and moving car parks to the edge of the city are among proposals by Winchester Action on Climate Change, referred to for the rest of the article as WINACC. However, the ideas have been branded a threat to business by critics. WINACC claims that the recent reduction of car parks has not had the feared negative impact on footfall. It carried out research, and its report reveals there are underused spaces in the city. WINACC has called for such parking spaces to be reallocated for other uses. Their recommendations include shifting parking to the edge of the city to reduce congestion and air pollution, and using pricing to manage demand. The City Council is currently undertaking a review with Councillor James Burns, portfolio holder for economy, saying he must listen to business concerns. But John Beveridge, chairman of the WINACC Transport Action Group, said, "Decisions mustn't be based on prejudice and assumptions, but on evidence. This report from WINACC gives the evidence that the City Council needs. We call on the Council to look carefully at the facts before they make decisions, which will be so important for the future of the city." In recent months, the Friarsgate multi-storey and Chesil Street open-air car parks have closed, and Upper Brook Street will follow. The WINACC report clashes with the views of traders. Tony Wyman of Childhood Dreams Toy Shop said the city is endangered because of a lack of parking. He has produced a report which he has circulated to Winchester BID and senior city councillors reported in the Chronicle last week. He accused WINACC of being out of touch with modern consumers who have little time and with young mothers and those with mobility problems. Mr. Wyman said some car parks are underutilised during the week, but spaces are essential for peak days. He fears Winchester will be unable to cope with peak days and Christmas. He said, "I think they," that is the WINACC, "are completely misplaced in their views. They do not really understand how retail works. The problem is, in retail, your customers are lazy. They do not want to walk up a hill. If you place extra barriers like increasing parking charges or having extra time with park and ride, they won't come to you. They will go somewhere else. Without car parking to cater for Christmas, you are dead. And if Winchester is to be successful, it needs to have car parking that runs at 80% load on a Saturday." Christine Holloway, WINACC co-director, said, "Our position is quite straightforward. What is really important is that decisions that are so significant to the health and well-being for the people of Winchester ought to be made on the basis of facts, not assumptions."
Beacon celebrations. A wave of prayer saw thousands come together in an evangelical festival to mark the church's birthday. Winchester Cathedral was at the heart of the national celebration after being chosen as one of just six national beacons. It hosted a special Pentecost service, which saw 3,000 people pray together as part of a 9-day event celebrating the coming of the Holy Spirit to the disciples, the moment regarded by Christians as the birth of the Church and the start of its mission to the world. People at thousands of churches across the country prayed for the renewal of the Holy Spirit and confidence to share their faith, while young Christians were encouraged to pray for passion and confidence in proclaiming the gospel. The wave of prayer was sparked by a call from Justin Welby, the Archbishop of Canterbury, and John Sentamu, the Archbishop of York, who urged people to take part and inspired the six beacon services at St Paul's Cathedral in London, Winchester Cathedral, Durham Cathedral, Coventry Cathedral, St Michael the Belfry in York, and Canterbury Cathedral. The Archbishop of Canterbury spoke to Hampshire churchgoers via video link set up in Cathedral Close at the service in Winchester, led by the Bishop of Basingstoke, David Williams. Churchgoers enjoyed worship with singer-songwriter Matt Redman, while 14 people were baptised at the event in a temporary font, including 13-year-old Holly Grace Catto. Holly said, "I've felt that God has been calling me to baptism for a while, but I hadn't been sure. On the night, the sermon and worship felt very personal and really spoke to me, so I asked to be baptised right there." Bishop David, previously the vicar of Christ Church in Winchester, said, "I was delighted that Winchester was chosen as a focal point for this beacon event."
Uproar over gun license for farm. Villagers are furious that a watercress farm company has secured a license to shoot and kill bird pests, including ducks. The watercress company says the control is important to protect beds on the Bedfield Lane at Springvale near Winchester. Neighbour Sandy Warwood said she challenged a man with a gun on the beds near her home in Headbourne Worthy. She said, "I was incensed. The company got themselves a licence earlier this month to kill everything that lands, ducks, even if they've got ducklings. It is not acceptable. There is a public footpath, gardens with livestock, a farm shop nearby. When I saw the man with a gun, I yelled at him and told him to go away, and he has gone." Tom Amory, managing director of the firm, said the licence from Natural England was needed because bird droppings could contaminate the watercress. Mr. Amory said many methods were used, including fencing, bird scarers, netting and laser tools. Killing any animal was a last resort. He added, "We are not killing mother ducks. We have not killed any birds at Springvale. We have employed the services of a skilled team for many years, and this is not something new. Fortunately, the problem is diminishing, but still at a level that requires control." In an email to the parish council, Mr. Amory said, "I can assure you that we don't plan to totally eradicate any species, just any specific pest species that are not permitted and persistent, and more importantly, that have not responded to the steps of exclusion and disturbance and pose a risk to consumers due to food safety concerns. I can assure you, killing any animal is the very last resort, particularly if it's not for consumption." The issue was raised at Headbourne Worthy Parish Council, and the meeting resolved to point out their revulsion and distaste at this despicable action. In an email to Mr. Amory, Harry Warwood, chairman of the parish council and Sandy's husband, wrote, "Apart from harming your existing harmonious relations with the community and damaging your conservation record with your major supermarket customers, a gunman shooting in a residential area with footpaths, a busy farm shop, horses in fields, domestic garden pets and pedestrians using the surrounding pavements is a danger to public health. City Councillor Jane Rutter, who lives in Bedford Lane, said, "Whilst I appreciate rural businesses have to control wildlife destroying crops, I was very concerned at methods apparently being used, and particularly given the location of the beds next to homes and roads and the Bedford Lane crest bed, which is bisected by a popular footpath. I hope this licence will be reviewed urgently. Short of shooting every wild duck in Hampshire, it's difficult to see how they and other wild birds are to be kept out of beds open to the sky and minimally fenced."
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Botting. Pamela Botting, formerly of Oslebury, at the Cedars Care Home, Halstead, on the 26th of April, aged 86. Brown, Joyce Brown, formerly of Headbourne Worthy, on the 6th of May, aged 93. Crooks, Ray Crooks, known as Horatio, at Sunrise of Sonning on the 7th of May, aged 83. Emmons, Julie Emmons, née Mattingly, on the 9th of May, aged 71. Fitzgerald, Hugh Claude Fitzgerald, at home on the 7th of May, aged 89. Fitzgerald, Jean Kathleen, in hospital on the 5th of May. Hickman, Roy Arnold Hickman, aged 79. Ingram, Betty Ingram, née Findlay, on the 7th of May. Orwell, Alan Dennis Orwell, on the 26th of April in St Cross Grange Nursing Home, aged 85. Owen, Kenneth Owen, in Winchester Hospital on the 13th of May, aged 92. Payne, Cora Payne, née Dib, formerly of Winchester, passed away in America, where she has lived for many years. Next, we have Christian comment.
And this week it's written by Mary Gray, and she entitles it Brexit, the Spiritual Question. That's what everyone is talking about these days. Will Britain be better off, in or out of Europe? But surely there must be more at stake than solely economic issues. Are there not deeper values that we cherish, whether we are in or out of the European project? Let's look at Europe's origins. The European Union is founded on the values of respect for human dignity, freedom, democracy, equality, the rule of law, and respect for human rights, including the rights of persons belonging to minorities. There is a good record of the EU's actions to activate these values and a heartening record of the EU's humanitarian relief programme. And what about Christians in the EU? They are divided between Catholicism, Protestantism, and the Eastern Orthodox Church. In 2009, the EU had an estimated Muslim population of 13 million and an estimated Jewish population of over a million. Buddhism, Hinduism, and Sikhism are also represented. So what do religions contribute to the moral backbone of Europe? Let us look to key founding spiritual inspirations of Europe. Saints like Saint Benedict, patron saint of Europe from 480 to 557, who contributed more than anyone else to the rise of monasticism in the West, his rule being the foundational document for thousands of religious communities in the Middle Ages. Benedict provided guidance in the Dark Ages of the 5th century. So what about the crisis of faith with which we are confronted today? Pope Francis himself said that with his life and work, St. Benedict exercised a fundamental influence on the development of European civilization and culture, and helped Europe to emerge from the dark night of history that followed the fall of the Roman Empire. But Benedict was not alone. He is followed by a great cloud of witnesses, St. Francis and Clare of Assisi in the 12th century. They are still popular for values of simplicity, joy, and love of creation. In France, St. Vincent de Paul, a 16th century, was a priest who dedicated himself to serving the poor and was known as the Great Apostle of Charity. This inspiration is alive today in the commitment of numerous congregations to tackle poverty and injustice. In Spain, the great 16th century Saint Teresa of Avila was a mystic Carmelite nun, author during the Counter-Reformation, and theologian of contemplative life through mental prayer. She was also a reformer of the Carmelite order of her time. Her inspiration is widespread. From Germany, the 8th century Saint Boniface was a leading figure in the Anglo-Saxon mission to the Germanic parts of the Frankish Empire and established the first organized Christianity in many parts of Germania. So, in these days when Brexit asks us to consider of staying or leaving the EU on economic grounds, could the memory of Benedict, Francis, Teresa, and the dynamism of all European saints, inspiration of European values, along with the revered principles of Judaism, awaken us to deeper values that should inspire our shared moral future?
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We have quite a clutch of letters today, I think 13 in total. The first ones relate to the recent council elections, and then we have a number about parking problems in Winchester, and then there are a few other topics thereafter. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from Judith Martin, Winchester Independence candidate, St Michael's Ward, and it's entitled Angry at Attack. Sir, I am more angry than I can convey, publicly at least, at the personal attack on me by Labour's Peter Rees, Chronicle Letters, May the 12th. Before we put our names forward, the independent candidates had a rehearsal with a highly respected third party who pitched the sort of questions we might get from an audience. To me, he said, "You've been through an awful lot of parties. Don't you think that might be considered unstable?" My reply was that it was the parties that had changed around me, not my beliefs. Initially, I'd been a Green Party member and candidate in 1989. When the then Winchester Green Party fell apart, I was approached to join the Lib Dems on the strength of their environmental policies. I was proud to be a Lib Dem when they opposed Tony Blair's shameful Iraq escapade that continues to wreak destruction around the globe. My reasons for leaving the Lib Dems have already appeared on these pages. I joined Labour when it was obvious Gordon Brown was going to lose the 2010 general election in order to have a vote on the next leader. I didn't want another Blair, and believe that everyone should be concerned about the leadership of the party that is likely to be either the governing one or the main opposition. The point about the Winchester independents is that we want to take party politics out of local government, an ambition which my own political path illustrates. The idea that I should engage in espionage to copy local Labour policies would be laughable if it wasn't so insulting. My electoral material pointed out that all parties make the same promises, decent planning, affordable housing, clean air, yet nothing is accomplished. A child of five could understand that these are desirable things. I don't need to go to a Labour Party meeting to be told. The adjacent editorial regretting the wiping out of Labour is right, but all Peter Rees achieves is to tarnish what remains. That letter is from Judith Martin, Winchester Independence candidate, St Michael's Ward, Rumsey Road, Winchester.
And a second letter on the same subject. This is headed Shameless Smear, and it's written by Mike Caldwell. Sir, Labour's Peter Rees describes Winchester Independence, of which we are joint founders, as a loose group of people with too much time on their hands and not enough money. And our message to the electors of Winchester as the rag, tag and bobtail ramblings of those who tried to convince a few voters that independence was the best thing since sliced bread. Is factually inaccurate abuse of this kind really the sort of political discourse that serves the interests of Winchester and its people best? The fact is that 2,233 electors in the five city wards gave one of their votes to an independent candidate, campaigning to rid Winchester of party politics and reform the city council. That is 17.5%, nearly one in five, of those who voted. Not a few voters. In St Michael Ward, it was just over one in five. Despite the disaster of Silver Hill, none of the three big political parties even mentioned in their election literature the need to reform the council, to ensure that that kind of thing can never happen again. Can they be surprised that independent candidates with a wide variety of views on other matters, but united on the need for council reform and in the belief that party political ideology and groupthink have no part to play at local level, take votes from them? We plead guilty to Mr. Rees's accusation of not having enough money. But we have certainly not had too much time. On the contrary, the independent candidates we supported did so despite our having only 7 weeks from launching the group to polling day, and for four of the five, despite their having to fit their campaigns into busy working lives. We look forward to seeing more independents standing in more wards in the election in 2018. In the meantime, we will continue to press for the reforms that the damning report on Silver Hill calls for and resist attempts by the complacent council officers and political parties to brush it under the carpet. That letter was written by Mike Caldwell, Nuns Road, Hyde, and Tim Fell of Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And continuing the same theme, here is Andrew Beadle writing a letter, said, explain yourself. Sir, I was amazed to read in Peter Rees's letter of the Chronicle May the 12th that Judith Martin of Winchester Independence had been a member of the Labour Party until shortly before the elections. Whilst she was happy to remind everyone that she had once been a Lib Dem, she never disclosed her very recent political affiliation. And yet it was only a few weeks earlier that she had criticised me for not disclosing I had been a Conservative candidate quite a few years ago. I find the suggestion that the independents had plagiarised the local Labour Party policies for the elections incredible, and I believe they owe people who voted for them an explanation. For obvious reasons, political parties do not usually reveal publicly who is or has been a member. But in this case, Mr. Rees has performed a public duty. Andrew Beadle, Milesdown Place, St. Giles Hill, Winchester.
This letter is about turnout figures, and it's from David Selby. Sir, it was disappointing when reading the Winchester City Council election results not to see included the percentage turnout, as this gives a clear indication of the depth of interest in politics at a local level. The turnout in Winchester was 43%, and the turnout for the police commissioner in the same district was a little less. But not all districts in the Hampshire Police Authority area had local elections. So the 29% turnout overall for the PCC must have been abysmal, as usual, in the areas where there was no local election. The government obviously needed both elections to take place simultaneously in order to give some semblance of support for their American clone, which has been somewhat undermined in those areas with no local elections. For a government anxious to get rid of back office staff and expensive bureaucracy, this particular imposition from the centre is a great example of both at the same time. What this expensive post, which includes deputies and accompanying support staff, has added to policing in this area is a mystery to most people. In addition, with a now Tory PCC as opposed to a quasi-Tory, it is a blatant attempt to politicise an aspect of civic life, the police force, which has always had the reputation of carrying out its duties free of political bias, whatever political party is in power. The present government has never presented, to my satisfaction, a coherent or convincing argument for the imposition of such expensive posts, and likewise for elected mayors, which Winchester CC and Hampshire CC have quite rightly rejected. That's from David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
A letter now written by Peter Rees, and it's headed Transport Woes. Sir, Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dream is an excellent example of how the city needs to sustain and encourage the growth and development of independent shops such as his, a favourite of mine and my grandchildren. Chronicle, May the 12th. Bringing more cars into the centre will not create a vibrant economy. I suspect moving into the Brooks, Winchester's faded upmarket and abandoned pastiche of an Arndale shopping disaster, is much more to do with a poor economic decision. It was much better located on a proper street. The city centre is not endangered by the lack of car parking, but by the perils of trying to cram even more Chelsea tractors and their occupants into a medieval city. It is endangered by the volume of cars pouring in daily and the understandable reluctance and inability of sensible people, shoppers and consumers, not to come into a congested and polluted city, inadequately serviced by decent public transport. Park and rides are underused. Public transport is woeful, especially at weekends for those in rural areas. Paving over the city for more cars is not the answer. Existing public transport must be made better, more frequent, more efficient, bringing in greater footfall. Councillor Burns and the Tories have constantly reneged on promises to close four car parks. These were originally going to be developed to provide more inner-city housing, but surprise, surprise, they never materialised. No change there from the Tories. And where is the evidence that people are going elsewhere? The Tories are doing a U-turn on city car parking, where pollution levels are higher than the national average. Even if cars could drive into the door, traders would continue to complain, as they did when street and market trading developed. It was inconvenient smells from food cooking in the street. Goodness, what next? It is to be regretted that BID is not independent, often ignoring local people, frequently siding with the Tories. Let's see them gather some verifiable public evidence rather than those solely with vested interests. That is written by Peter Rees, former Labour City Councillor, Monarch Way, Winchester.
So, Tony Wyman writes on the bypass now vital. Sir, I welcome Councillor Burns' positive response to my paper on car parking, reported in last week's Chronicle, and look forward to the Council addressing this vital issue. On the other hand, I am not surprised, but nevertheless disappointed, by Wynn ACC and fellow travellers in their angry and aggressive response. It is easy to be complacent in arguments about other people's businesses and jobs, but different when it is your own. They seem to have missed the point that parked cars do not generate pollution, while cars cruising around trying to find a parking space do. Minimising pollution demands easily availability of parking and good signage directing cars to available spaces. Another major source of pollution is through traffic, and that will continue regardless of car parking. Untold damage has been done to the quality of life in the city area by an earlier generation of single-issue environmentalists who had successfully campaigned to prevent a Western Relief Road being built. In 2016, the need is greater than ever for a new road between Pitt and the A34. That would enable the closure of Winchester to through traffic, not pollution on the head, and dramatically raise the quality of life in the city centre. Previous proposals to use the now heavily built-up Chilbolton Avenue and Romsey Road as an alternative route just do not work. You only have to observe the stationary traffic and sample the pollution on Romsey Road to know that. My immediate concern is to address the car parking problem and to protect Winchester businesses and jobs. However, we should all work together to address city centre pollution by campaigning for a Western Relief Road and the closure of the city centre to through traffic. On the other hand, if Wynn ACC et al. Want to protest against that as well, I can only reflect back their own argument and say that they would appear to be arguing for polluting more people in Winchester in exchange for grass and wildflowers. Tony Wyman, Childhood's Dream, The Brook Centre, Winchester.
This letter is about parking, too, and it's from Andy Smith. Sir, is it coincidence that all the people opposed to more parking spaces in Winchester don't actually need them? Phil Gagg, letters May the 5th, is the latest example of a city resident within a short walk of all shops and amenities. Far more representative and concerning was the lament from Tony Wyman, letters April the 28th, complaining that the current lack of spaces is driving business away. As a Winchester resident and council taxpayer, I expect my city council to provide adequate parking. I am not going to use park and ride. This is for visitors. In any event, I live on the wrong side of the city. By contrast with Salisbury and Oxford, Winchester's park and ride are poorly spread. If I can't pop into town and readily find a parking space, I will go elsewhere, which is precisely the reason why businesses are right to be concerned. As for traffic pollution, I suggest that more consideration needs to be given to the problems caused by cars either queuing or endlessly circulating the one-way system, searching in vain for an available parking space. Perhaps Mr. Gagg has a space outside his house I could use. Andy Smith, Teg Down Leeds, Winchester.
And another letter about parking. This is written by Catherine Turnis, who is the Executive Director for the Business Improvement District, BID. Footfall declines, it's headed. Sir, I was pleased to read Councillor Byrne's comments last week, calls for more parking in city. I have been sharing BID members' feedback with the local authority, especially during the festive period when the city struggled to cope with visitors. Since then, we have lost Chesil Street car park and will likely soon lose Upper Brook Street. With the closure of Friars Gate 2, there is a net loss of 400 spaces, yet the principle of the Winchester District Car Parking Strategy 2014 to 2018 states that the objective is to retain parking capacity in the town generally at current levels. We welcomed the opening of Pitt Manor Park and Ride, and it will assist visitors here for the day, but that doesn't mean the city doesn't require further central car parking. How consumers use city centres is changing. People are leading increasingly busy lives. Yes, we'd like clients and shoppers to stay in Winchester for the day, but sometimes we need to be able to pop in to pick up a parcel, go to the bank or meet a friend for coffee. Yes, public transport is favoured, but it's not necessarily an option for all, and indeed, convenient and park and ride doesn't run on Sundays. Over 5 years ago, the BID chose to fund a service from East P&R car parks during December and continues to do so every year to help aid the business community and their customers to visit the city. As for Mr. Gillam's doubts about the measurement of footfall by BID, we have the occasional day when power fails, but now that technology has advanced, we are investing in solar-powered counters, which will also be able to map out how people use the city. I have spoken with WinACC and they have rectified their report. Footfall was reported to have decreased by 5% in the high street in 2015 versus 2014. It may well be better than the national statistics, but that doesn't mean the matter should be ignored, nor does it mean that parking is the only issue of footfall declining. That's written by Catherine Turnis, Executive Director, BID, Parchment Street, Winchester.
Slightly different subject. Rosemary Poole writes on the expansion in our town is vandalism. Sir, here we go again. Our beautiful city is threatened once more with a development totally out of scale with its natural footprint. What possible reason, except to increase the size of the city council's coffers, could there be for increasing the population of our already overcrowded town, which should have had years ago special protection? It is, after all, our ancient capital. Winchester does not need more offices and shops. There are plenty of empty ones already. And it is Winchester's comparative smallness and antiquity that tourists come to see. To build large office blocks in front of our pretty little station and to plan a commercial hub to replace our existing cattle market car park seems to me to be pure vandalism. What fun the council officers must have had dreaming up this awful and quite unnecessary scheme. Rosemary Poole, St James's Villas, Winchester.
This letter about the Queen's birthday is from Christine Pilgrim, who was a church warden of two churches in Winchester, and which ones will become clear when I read the letter. Sir, with regards to the Queen's 90th birthday weekend on June the 10th to the 12th, I would be pleased to hear from anyone by June the 8th who has memorabilia of or were baptised or married in St Lawrence Church or St Swithin upon Kingsgate, Winchester, preferably during 1926, the World War II years, or the 1950s and 1960s. Taken from Bishop Tim's letter to all parishes on February the 15th, 2016, is this, quote, "This momentous occasion will be marked by official celebrations across the country. Every church is being encouraged to organise an exhibition of the life of its parish over the previous 90 years, charting the changes in the lives of our communities since 1926 and highlighting how the church has remained at the heart of the community." End of quote. With your help, we shall endeavour to fulfil his wish. But regardless of whether you can help, we would be delighted for you to see our two beautiful historic city churches flower-filled for the Queen's 90th birthday. That's Christine Pilgrim, Church Warden, 75 Cannon Street, Winchester. And if you have any information to give her, she can be reached on 01962 864 069. I'll read that again. 01962 864 069.
Mark Thornhill writes, disabled friendly. Sir, with reference to Paul Davies' letter to the editor regarding our pub-winning Hampshire Best Pub, Chronicle, May the 12th, his statement that our disabled facilities are non-existent is totally incorrect. Regardless of the award, of which we are, of course, extremely proud, we have full facilities here that include disabled toilets, access in all areas of the bar and restaurant, and a designated parking space too. We have always welcomed all guests and are frequented by a number of wheelchair users throughout all times. I'm not sure where Mr. Davies has gathered his information, as even he contradicts his own letter in the last paragraph by stating that we do have disabled parking. However, we would welcome Mr. Davies to our establishment any time. And should he have any queries with a future booking, I'd ask him to speak to me personally and I'll accommodate his needs and requests. That's written by Mark Thornhill, who is the landlord of the King's Head, Hursley.
Mike Biden writes on a sparkling debate. Sir, some of those at the Speaker's Festival on Sunday evening for the advertised debate between two authors were surprised by the added bonuses of Jacob Rees-Mogg, MP, the Solicitor General, Robert Buckland, MP, and James Forsyth, the political editor of The Spectator, together with our MP, Steve Brine, in the chair. As a couple with a weekend festival ticket commented to me, this event looks as though it has been hijacked. Well, it might have been, but what a debate. Sparkling, witty, and good-humoured. During the event, Steve Brine kept a tight rein on proceedings whilst letting the discussion flow. We are grateful to him for his last-minute invitation to Robert Buckland, the Solicitor General, to join his other guests. Speaking for the Remain campaign, he brought balance to what had threatened to be a very one-sided affair only a week earlier. His participation was in part due to a recent change in party policy, allowing Conservative MPs from opposing camps to speak at the same event. As a result, word had gone round and the lecture room was sold out. Facing each other in front of a public audience in which persuading the jury of the undecided was the priority, put both sides on their best behaviour. Both condemned the excesses of the national campaign with its recent reference to Hitler and World War III by Boris Johnson and David Cameron, respectively. Instead, the speakers used humour to diffuse emotions while still conveying the passions of their convictions. All in all, it was a rare treat. How much of this unexpected success was due to the intervention of the European movement last week matters not. What it demonstrated was that the Conservative Party has nothing to fear and the public everything to gain from such debates. Let us hope for more. A final show of hands gave a 55-45 majority to leave, reflecting more an opinion within the local party than Winchester as a whole. Mike Biden, events organiser, European Movement, Hampshire.
This last and 13th letter from P.L. Williams is about banning balloons. It's quite brief. Sir, William Vine wrote last week, Chronicle Letters, May the 12th, deploring the use of balloons as an aid to celebrations. They are a needless, harmful extravagance, and I fully support his remarks. That is from P.L. Williams, Stoke Road, Abbots Barton, Winchester.
That concludes the letters, and it's quite a lively raft this week. Anyway, we now go on to items of historical interest. We have them for 200, 125 years ago. I don't know why we haven't got one for 50 years ago, but anyway, it's just the three. So we'll start off with 200 years ago.
200 years ago was May the 20th, 1816, and the item is headed Friend or Foe? A serious affray has taken place in India between His Majesty's 87th Foot and the division of the Honourable Company's European Regiment. Such had been the jealousy and ill will excited between the troops that it was determined to separate them by sending away the 87th Regiment from its station in Burhampur. The 11th of November was appointed for that purpose, when the evening before many privates of that corps rushed out of their barracks, armed with naked bayonets, and a regular battle ensued between them and a part of the Honourable Company's European Regiment. Before they could be parted, many men were severely and some dangerously wounded.
100 years ago, on May the 20th, 1916, a plucky Belgian girl. A rather pretty story is told of the spirit animating a bright little Belgian girl, Gerardine van der Aar, age 13, one of the Belgian refugees housed with her parents at St. Cross, under the charge of Monsieur Ertig. She had heard that the war didn't progress as well as was wished, and she thought if she could get across to Belgium, she might become a Girl Scout and in time return to England with some Belgian soldiers to fetch and train other Belgian girls. She walked the whole distance to Southampton, and near the docks, a man got her into his company on some pretext. A lady who was passing, not liking the look of things, questioned her, to which she answered, "I am going to France, to the Belgian front." The lady took her home and then communicated with the Southampton police.
25 years ago, May the 17th, 1991. Young jobless rise. Winchester Careers Office will launch a job search on Monday because so many young people in the city are out of work, a situation the local Liberal Democrats have described as a disgrace. Figures released yesterday, Thursday, show that there are now 61 youngsters searching for all too few jobs. The figures are more than double last year's total. Richard Connolly, a careers advisor in the County Council's Upper High Street, Winchester office, says the Job Search Week is a local initiative and scores of firms will be targeted for possible vacancies. "We will be doing everything possible to help these youngsters," he said.
Next, we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, and that will be followed by a first person.
The comment is headed, "Parking Issues Back on Council Agenda." Few subjects are as divisive as parking. Opinion on the issue in Winchester ranges from the green view, that it should be minimised, to those who want to park their cars when they like, where they like. Parking is shooting back up the agenda with recent closure of the Cheswell Street open air car park, the collapse of Silver Hill, and with it the new Friarsgate multi-storey, and the looming closure of Upper Brook Street for the new St Clement's surgery. Traders, supported by the BID, are calling for a return to the 1970s and 80s, when the primacy of the car was unquestioned. They say, although the evidence is largely anecdotal, that the lack of parking is driving customer away to places where it is supposedly easier. The City Council looks like it is ending the 25-year policy that has seen a restriction on city centre parking and the development of park and ride. Councillor James Burns, economic portfolio holder, told this paper he is considering more short-term parking in the centre. Quite what that entails is unclear, and it could be a huge mistake, especially if it increases congestion. The City Council needs to be crystal clear about its plans, but beforehand it should undertake proper research into how the car parks are being used and whether the shoppers really are deserting Winchester because of the lack of parking and not for other reasons, such as the growth of internet shopping.
And this is an article written by Ron Allison. Let's hear it for the BBC. We are fond in this country of referring to some of our institutions or personalities as national treasures, which I take to mean that we value something or someone very especially. Much is added to our lives by them, and we would be much the worse off if they were no longer with us. The monarchy and the Queen come to mind immediately, along with the National Health Service, our parliamentary system, the proms, provincial newspapers, the Church of England, marmalade, you try getting any in the United States, parks in our towns and cities, the seaside, Sir David Attenborough, and of course, the late Sir Terry Wogan. Please go ahead and pick your own choices, while to my list I will certainly add the British Broadcasting Corporation. Much in the news following the introduction of the government's white paper on the future of the corporation, the BBC is assured of inflation-linked rises in the licence fee, now £145.50 a year, until 2022. This guarantee seems to have satisfied the BBC's hierarchy, but there is clearly an acceptance that such a funding process is unlikely to be approved again. During this coming charter extension, the BBC will have to meet certain targets, including developing other ways of raising revenue for new services, while the corporation as a whole will be regulated in future not by a trust, but by Ofcom, through a unitary board, including six members appointed by the government. There are many more other detailed requirements in the white paper, several of them sensible and necessary, and they will be much debated. The fact remains, though, that for most of us, discussing the BBC means talking about its programmes, not about how it is managed. Personally, I admire the Beeb tremendously. I grew up at first listening to it, then viewing it as well, before working for its news and outside broadcast departments in the 1950s, 60s and 70s. The golden age of television, I call it, but don't take that too seriously. My first radio memories must have been of Children's Hour with Uncle Mac, signing off every evening with, "Good night, children, everywhere." Larry the Lamb figured strongly in my life in those days, but I was soon on to the comedians like Flanagan and Allen, the Weston brothers, and a little lady, later Tommy Handley's Itmar. The outbreak of the Second World War in 1939 brought the BBC into even greater prominence, and from then on it was a combination of news, music, comedy and variety programmes that helped us through the war and most certainly enabled spirits to be raised. Music while you work and workers' playtime were part of the daily diet on the old home service. The BBC ended the war with its reputation for the highest of standards totally established. All the while, the BBC was serving a huge audience, and to this day, Nicholas Parsons is saying no more than the truth when he introduces listeners around the world to Just a Minute on Radio 4. That this old relic, the programme, I mean, not Nicholas, is still mainstream comedy on Radio 4, is both a tribute to its participants and an indictment of so much of what is billed as comedy these days. Otherwise, there is not too much wrong that I can find with what I hear and see on the BBC. It may be an odd organisation, but it works for us. Finally, I cannot let this football season pass without referring to two of our clubs, Southampton and Portsmouth. Even though the latter missed out on promotion, it seems that the worst is now over at Fratton Park. The Saints are still short of top four status, but they have made a splendid season, superbly managed by Ronald Koeman and playing some excellent football. I simply have to put them up there as one of my treasures.
Right, now to the week's announcements. All listeners, friends and volunteers are invited to attend the Winchester Talking Newspaper AGM, which will be held on Tuesday of this coming week, 24th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. After a brief business session, there will be a talk by Ian Murray, who is the editor of the Southern Daily Echo, which also looks after the Winchester Hampshire Chronicle. And afterwards, there will be an afternoon tea, to which everybody is most cordially invited. So we hope we see a lot of our listeners, friends and volunteers at the Talking Newspaper AGM Tuesday, 24th of May, 2 p.m. at Littleton Memorial Hall. What's on coming up? Monday the 30th of May, which is the bank holiday, in the cathedral at 4 p.m. there's an organ recital. Tickets are £10 and the cathedral box office number is 01962 857275. That's 01962 857275. On Saturday the 4th of June in the Abbey Gardens, Winchester, the Queen's 90th birthday is being celebrated by a grand picnic, and information is available from the Winchester Tourist Office on 01962 840500. That's 01962 840500. On Saturday the 11th of June in St Lawrence's Church, at 7 p.m. there is music for a summer evening. Tickets cost £18 and these can be obtained by telephoning 07523 100 120. That's 07523 100 120. And on the same evening, Saturday the 11th of June, in the cathedral, there is a Brass Britannia for a royal birthday, which I understand is a brass band concert given by Foden's Works Band. Tickets are available from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275, 01962 857 275. But the note that I have here says that the only tickets remaining are those without view, which are in the aisles, costing £10. But if you're interested in going, it's worth ringing up the Cathedral Box Office anyway. And then there will be fireworks in the inner close at 10 p.m. And then on Saturday the 18th of June, the Old Alsford Village Fair will be held on the Village Green from 2 p.m. to 4:30, and that is free. Lighting up times. Today, Friday, the 20th of May, sunrise was at 10 past 5 in the morning and sunset will be at 5 to 9 in the evening. And Wednesday of next week, sunrise will be at 5 o'clock in the morning and sunset will be at 9 o'clock in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. We now move on to items of general news interest.
Register for referendum. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury is urging everyone to make sure they are registered to vote in next month's EU referendum. Teenagers who have turned 18 since the April the 18th registration deadline for the recent local elections, or anyone who has moved, must register by June the 7th to vote in the poll to decide whether the UK stays or leaves the European Union. Mr. Hollingbury said, "I would like to remain in the EU, but regardless of whether people agree with me or not, it's vitally important that everyone casts their vote, and to do so, and they must be registered as in any other election."
Cathedral splendour back. It was a special day at Winchester Cathedral last Wednesday as work was completed on restoring its lead roof. Scores of onlookers watched as 27 tonnes of purpose-built scaffolding was removed, unveiling the result of 50 months' restoration. Work had been carried out on the lead roofing to fix leaks to preserve the wooden beams beneath. The lead was more than 150 years old in some places, with a plaque on the roof ranging the age from 1819 to 1897. Designed and constructed by Salisbury firm Blenco Scaffolding Limited, it is believed this is the first time this kind of scaffolding has been used on a cathedral. Our aspirations have become a reality now in a very visible way, said Annabel Boys, Receiver General. We are on a journey which started 5 years ago and it will continue for at least another three. Further work is taking place, including the restoration of the presbytery roof, the 16th century vault and some unique medieval glass. This is an exciting moment for the cathedral, added Dean of Winchester, the Very Reverend James Atwell. And it's accompanied by three photographs showing the huge crane that was used to remove the scaffolding in one piece at a time and depositing it on the adjacent grass.
Major award for your Chronicle. The Hampshire Chronicle was awarded Local Publisher of the Year at the NFRN Southern Region Award this month when the paper was commended for its commitment to the region it serves. The award was announced at a glittering black tie gala dinner and marked the 21st anniversary of the event with record attendance held at the Crown Plaza Hotel in Reading. Editor-in-Chief of the Chronicle, Ian Murray, who will be speaking at the Winchester Talkie newspaper AGM this coming Tuesday, said he was delighted on behalf of the whole team for the award. We all know that we have the community at the centre of everything that we do, but it is heartening to have this fact recognised by others.
Nurses gather for reunion. Nurses who trained at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital 50 years ago reunited at a special event. 15 nurses gathered at Cote Brasserie in Winchester where they had lunch and reminisced. The group had previously met for their 20-year reunion in 1986. Although not all of them were at the event this year, the organisers were pleased with the turnout. They had nurses turn up from as far afield as America, and the 15 who attended represented nurses who trained in January, March and October in 1966. Christine Pilgrim, 68, from Winchester said, "It's really good to reminisce. Obviously in 1966 we didn't use computers, hours were long and sitting down very rare. We were very much on the cusp of the programme Call the Midwife. But within the 3 or 4 year training, there were huge changes. It was great to be part of that change." Jenny Callard of Goodworth, Clatford said, "We feel we have changed very little over the years and many of us have not stopped talking. We have a lot of good memories of those times." And there are quite a few photographs accompanying this article. Of course, there's one of all the 15 nurses at the Cote Brasserie. And there's a lovely one of the reunion 20 years ago of mostly the same people, but looking slightly less worn. and then there is also a photograph of Jenny Callard and Christine Pilgrim, who are the two quoted in the article in the 1960s.
Dad attacks drink drive sentencing. The father of a young Alsford man nearly killed in a road crash has criticised sentencing powers. Elliot Gemmell had been banned from the road for drink driving after a near-fatal car crash. Two passengers in his car were seriously injured when the Clio slewed off the road and struck a tree on November the 27th. Gemmell's reading was 91 milligrams of alcohol per 100 millilitres of blood when the legal limit is 80. He was fined £300, ordered to pay a £30 victim surcharge and disqualified from driving for 16 months. The father of one of the passengers attended the magistrate's court to read out an impact statement. The father, who asked not to be named, told the Chronicle, "Our son sustained serious head injuries and another passenger was badly injured in a road accident before Christmas. The driver, who admitted to be significantly drunk, received a driving ban of just 16 months and a derisory fine of £300. The driver's genuine remorse is an important factor, but where there is the deterrent here for others who decide to drive in similar circumstances and cause near fatalities. I have yet to meet anyone since who didn't think that the charge, ban and fine were completely inadequate given the facts." The father said the family did feel sympathy for Gemmell, but added, "It seems that we have now reached the point where an action can only be taken on the basis of something that can be directly measured, such as blood alcohol level, or whether someone actually dies or not. And then it is entirely based on tariffs with little or no flexibility. The huge cost to the NHS and emergency services, running into hundreds of thousands of pounds, and significant impact on my son and our family, has effectively been ignored."
So much in common. It was a way to bring the village together and showcase what it had to offer. Common Have a Go took place last Saturday and is a new family event. From pony rides to dog assault courses, visitors were treated to an abundance of activities at Colden Common Park. There were also stalls set up by local businesses showcasing their wares. Organiser Maureen Rees, Colden Common Community Association, told the Chronicle she could not have hoped for a better day. "I was really worried leading up to the event. I just kept thinking what could go wrong, probably would," admitted Ms. Rees, "but nothing did. It was an absolutely fantastic day, especially as the sun was out." Ms. Rees said the main reason for organising the event, which completes Colden Common Fete, which replaces Colden Common Fete, was to create a stronger community feel. "It is not as it was 20 or so years ago," she added. "Back then, everybody knew each other and had a good rapport. Now families use cars to drive in and out of the area, not really having the time to get to know their neighbours. I hope the event changes this." One of the main talking points of the day was the imaginative name. Ms. Rees said the idea for Common instead of Come And came from one of the first meetings, just by chance. "I do love it." The Community Association said the event would return in 2017, and the article is accompanied by many colourful pictures showing young and old joining in various events and seemingly having a very, very good time.
Fond farewells to outgoing mayor. The great and good of Winchester have gathered to say an official farewell to the mayor, Angela Clear. Councillor Clear, the Liberal Democrat member for Wickham, was due to officially hand over to her deputy Jane Rutter at the annual meeting of the City Council at the Guildhall after the Chronicle went to press. The traditional black tie dinner was held at the Guildhall on Friday evening. Invited were civic dignitaries from across the county, councillors and their families, as well as senior council officers. Councillor Clear is Shawford-born and Eastleigh raised and was the 816th Mayor of Winchester, believed to be the second oldest mayoralty in the country after London. And there's a colour photograph accompanying this article with all the various dignitaries I nearly said fancy dress, I meant evening dress. I beg their pardons. But the reason I said fancy dress, I suppose, is because two chaps here are the mace bearer, Darren Jones, who's resplendent in purple, carrying this most enormous mace you've ever seen. And on the other side of the photograph is the sword bearer, Mr. Richard Atkinson, who's equally resplendent.
Now, an item from Belgarum is an alternative look at the news, and it says, "Stolen zebra appears to have been found." A zebra worth £2,500, which was stolen in Hampshire, appears to have been recovered from a house in Southampton. David Patrick spotted the sculpture being put onto a flatbed truck in Shirley on Sunday. Gilbert is one of the 150 pieces being displayed across the area by Marwell Zoo, which announced its recovery an hour and a half after the sighting. Mr. Patrick said, "We just left our flat, and as we got to the end of our close, we see the police putting the missing Marwell zebra onto a tow track." And there is a photograph, and just to avoid any misunderstanding, the zebra is not a real zebra. It's actually a sculpture, and it is a beautiful multicoloured design, looking a little odd on the back of a tow truck.
It wasn't crossing the road. Right, new era for post office after revamp. Staff and customers at a Winchester post office celebrated the start of a new era. Oliver's Battery post office has been reopened following an extensive revamp, which means it can stay open 7 days a week. As reported in the Chronicle, the post office in Oliver's Battery Road was closed for 10 days to allow the modernisation to take place. It means the post office service will be available during the store's opening hours from Monday to Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. It means it will also be open on Sunday from 8 a.m. to 7 p.m. On hand to mark the event on Monday was Winchester MP Steve Brine, Parish Council Chairman Brian Michener, and pupils from Oliver's Battery Primary School. Mr. Brine said, "The longer opening hours will really benefit the whole community with the impressive choice of when post office customers can visit. The post office counter fits in well into the layout of the store." Sylvie Nimal, who has been postmaster since 2010, said, "Post office customers really like the open plan till. It makes it far easier for myself and my long-serving colleague, Tina Foles, to have conversations with customers. It makes the branch friendlier and more welcoming." And there is a colour photograph showing Steve Brine about to cut the red tape across the front of the shop, with pupils from the primary school and lots of visitors looking on and cheering and waving.
Residents petition to save Tip from closing. 1,000 people have signed a petition against plans to either close the recycling centre in Alsford or reduce its opening hours. Councillors and residents fear the Tip in Prospect Road will close in council cost-cutting. It comes as Hampshire County Council is running a consultation on the future of centres in Hampshire with a deadline of midday on Wednesday, May the 25th. The petition The petition was presented to Executive Member for Transport and Environment Councillor Rob Humby last Friday to show the strength of public feeling. Residents previously spoke of their fears for the Tip at a public meeting in the town, where they highlighted their concerns that a closure would lead to more fly tipping and 15-mile round trips to Bar End in Winchester, which they say is not environmentally friendly. A statement by campaigners said, "Hampshire County Council has launched its long threatened consultation to ask residents how they think savings can best be made in the cost of running Hampshire's household waste recycling centres. These savings could see the Alsford Household Waste Recycling Centre, our Tip, close or be forced to run reduced opening hours. We believe the consultation is flawed. There are a number of closed and weighted questions contained within this survey. The result will necessarily be unbalanced." One of the lead campaigners is Pat Lawrence from Cheriton, who called for council chiefs to rethink their proposals. Mr. Lawrence said, "I hope the amount of objections to it will hopefully make Hampshire County Council reconsider this plan. Obviously, the savings have to be made, which we understand is £1.5 million. We would be happy with reduced opening hours or closing for one day a week if they have to save this money. But the overriding feeling is that we can't live without the tip. He called for residents to fill in the consultation online. And for those of you with access to the internet, this can be done on www.hants.gov.uk/HWRC2016. I haven't got the energy to read that again. He said, if the tip closes, it will lead to a 50-mile black hole in central Hampshire. Mr. Hampshire added, sorry, Mr. Lawrence added, what is most important is that a petition only counts as one objection, but if people do the online survey, it counts in its own right. It is so important that people take part in the consultation.
Thank you, John. Very well read. A more serious subject. Accidental death. A mother died after falling down the stairs and hitting her head in Alresford, an inquest heard. Fiona Stansbury, 50, was descending the staircase of a friend's house in Broad Street when she fell and struck a metal radiator. Ambulance crews were called and she was taken to North Hampshire Hospital, Basingstoke, on March the 7th. However, due to a blood clot covering more than half her brain, doctors were unable to save her and she died the next day. Winchester Coroner's Court heard how the mother of one, also of Broad Street, had a history of alcohol dependency and was drunk on the day of her fall. A toxicology report found that she had a blood alcohol level of 246 milligrams per 100 millilitres, more than three times over the drink drive limit. Miss Stansbury also suffered from scoliosis, twisting of the spine, and underwent fusion surgery in 1988. Because of this, she struggled with back pain and used a walking stick. The 50-year-old could not wear a shoe on her right foot as she had cellulitis, causing it to swell and blister, the inquest heard. Senior coroner Graham Short said that these factors contributed to the former actress's death. Fiona used alcohol and was dependent upon it. She was more prone to falling. Alcohol causes unbalanced movement. The coroner recorded a verdict of accidental death.
Hearthstock pupils are put through their paces. Children at a Winchester school were put through their paces by a sergeant major. Sergeant Major Bailey of the Welsh Guards visited Hairstock Primary School, where he taught children how to march in formation, salute and stand. He had been given permission from the Queen to come in full ceremonial dress, which impressed pupils. Year 1 and Year 2 pupils enjoyed the visit, where they had the chance to ask questions to Sergeant Major Bailey on his life in the army. He was also quizzed by pupils about his uniform and ceremonial sword. But he turned tables on the children by inspecting their uniform and praised the three children who wore the shiniest shoes. And there is a small photograph showing the Sergeant Major marching along at the queue of children trying to look serious and copy what he's doing.
Right time for new homes. Plans have been announced to build homes on an industrial site in Alresford. Huxley UK Limited want to regenerate their industrial site on the Dean with a mixture of different sized properties. They will engage with the local community as initial proposals are drawn up. Winchester City Council has earmarked the site for housing as part of Local Plan Part 2, and Huxley say it is situated in an ideal location. The scheme will be designed to reflect existing buildings in the town. Company owner Paul Huxley said, "Since we came to Alresford in the 1970s, we have traded successfully over the years. However, after we sold our manufacturing business in 2000, the site was much too large for our own needs. Since then, we have let some of the buildings, but this has become increasingly difficult, and a large part of our site has been empty for a long time. We believe it's the right time to redevelop the site to assist in meeting local housing needs. Redeveloping this site with high-quality residential properties would achieve this, while simultaneously shielding the Greenbelt from development. We are committed to keeping the local community fully involved in proceedings. In the coming weeks, we will be looking to discuss our proposals with local residents, businesses, councillors, and third-party groups as part of the consultation process.
Bags of fun at Watercress Festival. Hundreds of families packed the sun-drenched streets of Alresford for the chance to enjoy the first watercress of the season. Hampshire cuisine and entertaining competitions. The Alresford Watercress Festival was back and bigger than ever, with the streets rammed full of stalls selling gourmet food and treats. Attracting people from across the county, the annual festival brought together the community and food lovers for a day of taste tests and the chance to celebrate the first watercress crop. The entire centre of Alresford was taken over, and one of the biggest attractions of the day was the World Record Watercress Eating Championships. The competition saw 16 people stuff their mouths full of two bags of watercress, including the current Guinness World Record holder Glenn Walsh. This year, Glenn managed to hold on to his title for the fifth year running, winning the championships in 1:37, and said he would be back next year to beat his personal best. Popular features of the event also included cooking demonstrations and scores of stalls from Hampshire Farmers Market showcasing the best local producers of food and drink. Families also enjoyed arts, crafts, jewellery, clothing and accessories for the house. Children also had the chance to test their circus skills with workshops, face paintings, falconry displays and a petting farm. And the streets were packed with people at the main stage enjoying performances from Hampshire musicians and dancers.
Event scoots a nifty £10,000... I'll read it again. Yeah. Event scoots a nifty £10,000. Scooter riders took to the track to raise thousands of pounds for charity. The sound of revved engines and dozens of colourful machines were on show at Winchester's Route 34 motor park. It was all part of the Nifty 50 Endurance moped and scooter event, which raises funds for charity. The teams had to battle their way around the off-road circuit for a gruelling 5 hours, endeavouring to keep their little 50cc to 90cc machines going. Most had to overcome mechanical breakdowns and fatigue in the hot weather. Trophies were awarded for the best-placed finishers, along with special trophies for fancy dress and also best endeavours, a trophy awarded to the team who have tried the hardest to complete the event. On this occasion, that trophy was awarded to top British superbike rider James Ellison and his team, as they had suffered all day long with various breakdowns and falls. The event raised more than £10,000 by the 60 teams who took part, and there is a colourful photograph there of the bikes all in a starting line on what looks a very sandy surface. I don't know how they could get their wheels to turn around in such a thing, but some of the bikes are all dressed up and one looks like a bit like a giraffe and so on. they're all there doing their best for the event.
Harassment case. Kevin King has avoided jail for harassing a woman. King, 54, of Colson Close, Winnell, admitted harassing Anne Marie Matthews between February the 14th and March the 18th with unwanted phone calls and texts. Magistrates jailed him for 8 weeks but suspended the sentence for 2 years. They ordered King to take part in a 32-day Building Better Relationships program and imposed a restraining order banning him from contacting Ms. Matthews or going within 100 metres of her home in Lawn Street, plus an £80 victim surcharge.
Hundreds on Froome ride. When most people get to see champion cyclist Chris Froome in the flesh, it's usually swooshing past in a blur of colour. But hundreds of cycling fans got the chance to get up close and personal with the Olympian for a surprise cycle ride. The Olympic gold medalist and two-time Tour de France winner organised a flash mob-style ride, which attracted 200 fans to cycle to Winchester Cathedral. By the end, only 30 had kept up. Froome, the only Briton to win the Tour de France twice, tweeted on Saturday saying, "Anyone keen for a short ride with me around Southampton this afternoon? Ride with Roomie." Froome had been at the university to use its wind tunnel in preparation for the Rio Olympics. He told the Chronicle, "We were down here doing some wind tunnel testing and I need to get a ride in today. Participation in cycling has exploded recently and I thought it'd be a really good thing to get people out on their bikes. I didn't think many people would turn up. I was expecting about 20 people, so seeing this in many people was just incredible."
Safety priority, says new chief. Hampshire's new crime chief says he will fight to make sure the county's police have enough funding and admitted more savings could be made. Michael Lane was speaking as he began his new job as the county's police and crime commissioner, referred to as the PCC, following his election on May the 5th. The Conservative beat incumbent Simon Hayes and said Hampshire Constabulary must adapt to the changing face of crime. The former Navy Commodore and Gosport Councillor secured £153,990 votes to land the job, which comes with responsibility for the £300 million budget. He will work alongside Chief Constable Olivia Pinkney, who is herself new, having only been appointed to replace Andy Marsh in March. Mr. Lane said the force was likely to face more budgetary pressures over the next 4 years, as well as the pressure of change, adding, "Criminals and technology are changing, and the nature of how communities engage with us is changing." Since 2012, the county has lost 1,000 officers, while 33 police stations will have closed or been sold off by 2018 as £80 million of savings are made. When asked if he could reassure residents about future job losses or station closures, he said he had much in common with Home Secretary Theresa May, but added, "If at some point we need to disagree, I will have a robust conversation. In due time, if the resources are sufficient and we can make economies, of course, I will, and if the resources are insufficient and we need more, I will fight for it. My starting point is to make sure that we are as effective and efficient as possible. The first thing I'm going to do is listen very carefully, so I'm going to be listening too." Beyond saying his number one priority was to keep us all safer, Mr. Lane said he could not give specific priorities at such an early stage. As previously reported, Ms. May is expected to announce an expansion of the powers wielded by PCCs, which could see them take on youth justice, probation, and court services. When asked if he supported extra powers, he said, "My first responsibility is to be excellent in delivering for the people of Hampshire the role of PCC. Whether the government negotiates or dictates that, there are changes that will be part of my job to respond to, those with the recall priority, which is keeping people safe."
A final item. Samaritans toast 40 years. For 40 years, a diverse group of people have been giving up their spare time to help people in distress. Volunteers for the Samaritans have done so with no hope or expectation of any reward. But now Samaritans past and present are urged to take part in a party on the Saturday, the 2nd of July, to mark the charity's four decades in Winchester. They are holding a party to celebrate these 40 years in the garden of the Bishop of Winchester's residence, Wolvesey. A spokesperson for Winchester Samaritans said, "We want to invite as many ex-SAMs as we can, but out of about 1,400 people who have been Samaritans in Winchester in the last 40 years, we only have contact details for about 350. So we need a means of getting the message out to all those who we have lost contact with. If anyone is interested in attending, they can write to the director, Winchester Samaritans, 13 Upper High Street, Winchester." That's 13 Upper High Street, Winchester. "The charity has just returned to its Upper High Street base and is always seeking volunteers to give up their time." That concludes our extracts from this week. For this week, our thanks are due to the editors, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. And thanks also to our various technical teams. And thanks also to our readers, Margot Meredith.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Peter Lydiard.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. And we hope to see you all at the AGM on Tuesday. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.